Tonight out there, southwest winds 5 to 10 knots. The wind waves will be less than 2 feet. West swell of 3 to 5 feet at 11 seconds. Showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. And for current temperatures, let's see, I've got Monterey at 53. It's 54 degrees in Salinas. It's also 54 in Watsonville. We're at 55 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios. And for your KSCO King of the Hill traffic update, let's see here. Nothing major to report right now, but if you see something, you can call me at 475-1080. The official time is 10:06 and 34 seconds on this Saturday, May 14th. Up next, the Saturday special. Stay tuned. KSCO Santa Cruz, I'm Nikki James.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Scott Gold, KSCO, filling in for Michael Zwirling. We've got a great program today. Cops are people, too. We got some great guests inside the studio and phoning in today. So sit tight, and we'll be right back.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Ready to rock and roll. I heard you say that there was a morning frog.
Yeah, did you like that?
Yeah, actually,
there
the morning frog.
There probably is one.
Yeah, it is. It's in my throat.
Oh, perfect.
This is still early for me.
You're doing great. You're doing real good.
This is Scott D. Gold sitting in for Michael Zwirling. No relation to Corey Gold, except that he is a good friend. I know everybody thinks that you guys think he's my uncle and all that, but he's not. I'm sitting in with Rick Ely. Let me test this out and see if you say hello. Go ahead.
Good morning, Scott.
Uh-oh. Hold on a second. I don't know which button I'm pushing here. Nikki's running over. We've got a couple callers calling in. Rick's actually got, we were just talking, he's got 41 years experience as in law enforcement. Oh, I'm sorry. That was me. That was all me. Now you can say good morning, sir.
Good morning, Scott.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
Do you have morning frog also?
I have a little bit of morning frog.
Right. I don't feel so bad. I'm not a morning person. I was called about 3 days ago. Michael Zwirling's on vacation. They asked me to come in, and they wanted to talk about some of the, I want to say it's more of a positive side to law enforcement, but it is actually a pretty negative thing, and it's kind of hidden. That's why I called you, and you have 41 years experience. Go into a little bit about what you've done just from where you started. I know you were up in Oakland and all that. It's an amazing story, actually.
Well, I started just over the hill at San Jose State College. When I was finishing up undergraduate degree, I became a state college police officer in 1970 and worked a year until I graduated, did a six-month stint in the military, came back in early 1972, I was hired by Oakland PD and served almost 26 years there. Rose through the ranks up to captain and the crime prevention commander. I was lucky to retire and be appointed by Pete Wilson in 1997 to Corrections, California Department of Corrections, now California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, as an assistant director. And I was in charge of reorganizing their internal affairs capacity and created a fairly significant unit in Sacramento and three regional offices, and ended up with about 400 employees, both in the prisons, and most of the prison staff worked for the prisons, but they reported to us in their special investigations units. And then from there, I decided that I needed to get back into municipal law enforcement. So in 2001, I was hired as the chief of police in Capitola and kind of fulfilled a lifelong dream of living, working, and playing in a coastal community, and brought my wife here and never looked back. We've had just a wonderful time in Santa Cruz County.
And that's where we met. I got to work for Chief Ely,
right,
who was an active chief. And we, like we said earlier, he weren't afraid to jump out of the doldrums of the office and run to calls, which was mm-hmm. kind of impressive to me. There wasn't, I'd worked with other chiefs and stuff, and they weren't as active as you were and as excited to be out on the streets and to participate in. And
right.
One of the things we're going to discuss today is the job stresses, the on the job and off the job, the unfortunately divorce rates, the suicide rates, the depression from isolation, and all of those subjects. We do have some callers that are going to call in that are ex-law enforcement to discuss that. One of the things that I've seen is, and I have a small, and I don't have as nearly as much experience as you do, but I did suffer from depression from one aspect of it, and that was from dealing with mental health issues
mm-hmm.
and dealing with people. We were trained basically to the same as we were trained, and I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like to me looking back, when you were dealing with a criminal that was, say, a child molester or a rapist or a physical crime like that, when you had to bring them in at Capitola, we would bring them in. Generally, I would work graveyard shifts, so we didn't have a detective. We were the detective. You'd bring them in, and the way they were trained or the way we were trained was to, you know, the number one thing was befriend this person, become a part of their life. You engage them, you pull them in, I can understand. Yeah, of course, I met her. I talked to the girl. Oh, I know what you're talking, mm-hmm. in order to pull the truth out of the person, a confession.
Right. Yeah, you have to do two things, obviously. You have to get down to their level to a degree. The other thing you have to do is befriend them so that they'll talk to you and be candid with their responses. And if you can do that, obviously,
reassuring them all the
time. You reassure them if you can get to that level, and you're obviously not buying into it, but you're playing a role. And police officers do it all the time. You played a role, and you got to their level. And if you're successful at doing that, you get a confession.
Yes. So what they did was they end up training us to a certain degree to do that with mentally unstable people. We went through these training, all the training. They said, you got to get in there, you got to get the story. Well, in my personal experience, when I would go up and I would talk to someone that, tried to kill themselves, and I'd start asking the question, I'd start filling out the forms. Well, three of the four main things, I'd think to myself, God, later I'd be writing the report, and man, I do that. I don't spend enough time with my kids. I work too much. I don't think I was able to deal with it beyond that. And I wasn't able to tell anybody beyond that, hey, I'm depressed. And there's no way you could say that. If I walked into the office and I'd said that to anyone there, what could happen to my career? Mm-hmm. What would go on there? How do I move forward past that?
And right.
It just starts building and building, and then there's the isolation that you don't, there's a whole list of things that we're going to go over here that kind of build off of that. And how do we turn that around? How does that, I told you a story the other night. I went to a dinner, I got invited to dinner, and one of the, which I don't typically like, one of my friends that invited me had mentioned to everybody that I was an ex-police officer, and the two people that were one sitting on the side of me and in front of me got up and moved.
Right.
That's a horrible feeling.
It's the isolation that comes with the job.
Yeah, right? And it's been a lot of years, and mm-hmm. I'm like, you don't even know me, and you're willing to get up and snub your nose at me?
Exactly.
I'm a person, which gets into a whole nother subject of looking at people differently. I'm still trained to do that, and you compartmentalize people as you learn about them, and you move them from one side to the other. And
absolutely, yep.
And just like I said, like a carpenter would look at a house and say, well, they did that wrong, and that's all you do. You're trained a certain way. The only good thing is one of the things they trained us was to laugh about stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if it's the most grueling thing or the most horrific scene, it didn't matter. You would find something funny to say. Unfortunately, I kept that because I like to joke around anyway. And I make comments that are just horrible. And I'm even to this day, my wife, I can shock anybody. And it all, I don't want to blame law enforcement, but that's where that kind of came from.
Right. You develop a gallows-type humor, and, of course, Joseph Wambaugh is, renowned for taking that and producing books and making fun and pointing out that it's a way to de-stress and depressurize situations. And cops, you know, the famous quote in the Wambaugh book, he's had a very serious auto accident, and people are gawking and rubberneckers, and the car drives by and says, "My God, officer, what happened?" And he bends over and picks up a head and says, "Oh, this guy just lost his head." In the book, it's a gruesome scene, but it's, you know, it's comical from the perspective that, you know, I don't think cops would do that today, but maybe 50 years ago they might have
been inclined
to do it.
Still do it to
they
themselves.
Might still do it, maybe.
You know, and it might be the one thing that gets you through that, because that is a lot to hang on to. And on a day-to-day basis, I think it's one of the hardest jobs in America. I read all these reports. I got called, so I started doing research. I read all these reports, and I'm reading reports where architect is more stressful. You know, these jobs, a real estate agent's more stressful. You know, just, and I can actually speak to this because I've been out there and I've done it. And the burst, like I told you, the burst stress in the burst stress is you're sitting on high, you know, 41st Avenue, and you get a three beep, and there's an emergency, and there's a bank robbery in progress, and you're right in front of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Been there.
Yep.
And the guy runs out with the gun.
Right.
And you go from literally daydreaming about going to Cabo. I can't wait. Three more days, I'm going to Cabo. And I'm looking at a guy run out of a bank with a gun.
Exactly. Yep.
What does that do to you? What does that do as your life expectancy? What is that? You were telling me that it's 13
years.
Yeah,
I mean, you got the post-traumatic stress syndrome stuff that goes on. It doesn't have to be one incident. But you go from a situation of total relaxation or near relaxation to flight or flight, and immediately the heart rate goes up, the adrenaline starts pumping, you have to take action. You repeat that over and over and over a 20, 25, 30 year career. And what the national CDC and others that have researched this, generally the consensus is that police officers live somewhere between 12 and 13 years less than their civilian counterparts. That's a national average. Most people say, "Oh yeah, they get shot on duty." No, that's not it. That's a small increment of that percentage. It's the lifestyle, it's the stress, it's the unrelenting shift changes, it's the sleep disorder issues, it's the traumatic stress, it's the abuse of not only drugs but prescription drugs and alcohol. It's all of those things combined. When officers, you know, over a 20, 30 year career of foot chases and shootings and running and car chases and crashes, they have a fairly high, as we all know in the industry, they have a fairly high accident rate and injury rate. It's inevitable if you're engaged in this type of business. So it's cumulative effects over a 3 or 4 decade career, which leads to officers unfortunately dying at a much, much younger age than civilian.
You're saying 13 years on
average.
It's
12 to 13 years on average. Firefighters, I think, is 8 to 9 years less. And once again, it's that stress.
Yeah, I think I just read that too. It was stress, and also the that's getting better in some ways because of the carcinogens they breathe in. But they're fixing that with all their new gear.
Respirators and breathers and all that.
So that's getting better for them. It is a I'm glad you brought up the firefighters. It's a tough road. Who makes it safe when you go to a scene? The cops come in, they make it safe, and the firefighters take all the glory.
Right.
They can go and have apple pie and ice cream in any house in the county. We're not welcome.
Yeah, well, we all love our firefighters, but yes, you're right. I mean, they save the kitten in the tree, they do the firefighting, they do the rescues. Law enforcement does much the same thing. We work together.
And they're all pretty damn good looking too, you know what I mean? That helps too.
They all
are sprack and, you know, working out. They're sitting in their department. They get to sleep at night. They, you know, we don't sleep. We don't do anything. We don't get to work out.
Let's not get into the bark lounge.
Yeah.
In the big screen.
I didn't even want to tell you.
Yeah,
I had that code to that their shop down there for a while, and I went in there and I saw the recliners, lazy boys and whatnot. Funny.
Yeah.
We don't want to get into that, but there is a line drawn there. It's a direct line. If you're a firefighter, you know, you guys picked the right path, trust me.
Yeah, that's what my kid, I had him trained as a firefighter, not a police officer.
Beautiful.
I learned something in 40 years.
Well, I learned it too. To be honest with you, I learned it after, though, was the problem.
Right.
All my friends are firefighters. I'm like, man, what is with you guys?
It's a great job.
Yeah, they just laugh. One of my friends is he's one of the battalion chiefs over in San Jose, and I still give him a hard time about sleeping all night. And you know, you guys have beds. I tried to rally for the cops to be able to sleep.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. You heard the ex-chief. Yeah, right. That'd be great to sleep in there. Get a call, get up. Guess we got to go. I used to be known for, and you can, Captain Clark from Capitola Division down there, the firefighters. There'd be a small fire in a garbage can at 3 a.m. It'd be raining out, and I'd call them, man, we got a fire. Just to get them up. Any chance we could get those guys up, I'll tell you what, I would get them up. And they hated me for it, too.
I bet they did. It took me 10 years to correct that.
Exactly. I love those guys. Oh, we're getting ready for a break here. She's signaling me with her two hands.
Okay.
Great. We'll come right back. KSCO 1080.
Spring is in the air, and you know what that means. Hello, Charlie Friedman here with Chris Jensen from JM Electric. Chris, spring is for sprucing up around the house and thinking about what kind of home improvement projects we want to tackle.
That's right, Charlie. And the easiest project you can cross off your to-do list is to have your home electrical system inspected.
Yep. Each year, over 53,000 electrical fires happen in American homes, and it's safe to say that many times the fire starts behind our walls where we can't see them. Luckily, I had a current safe inspection by JM Electric, and they helped me with problems I never knew I had.
If you're concerned about what electrical problems might be hiding in your walls, give JM Electric a call. We're happy to help folks out with a free assessment to see if our full current safe inspection is right for you. All it takes is a call.
There you go, folks. A free assessment of your home electrical system from JM Electric. Get this peace of mind for you and your family. Call JM Electric today and ask for the free assessment. 422-7819. That's 422-7819 or jmelectric.com. And tell them Charlie sent you.
When it comes to dental care, you want to be treated with comfort, compassion, and competence. And we believe you deserve it. Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody in Santa Cruz. Listen.
My name is Terry. I am terrified of going to the dentist. I was referred to Guy Peabody, and they told me about the sedated dentistry. They're really great people. The first time I went, I had taken a pill an hour beforehand, and I sat down in the chair and took another pill. It was at least 3 hours later. I woke up and all the work was done and I didn't remember anything and I hadn't felt any pain at all. It's so much better to walk in there and zone out and walk out 3 hours later and everything is done.
Dr. Guy Peabody provides a comprehensive approach to treating dental problems in the most comfortable ways possible, including sedation, laser therapy, and digital imaging. It's time. Take care of your teeth. Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 831-457-0343 or click on drpeabody.com. Wake up to a beautiful smile.
Real estate can be really confusing these days, but we make it easy to understand on Open House Radio. Hello, I'm Renee Mello, host of Open House. Each Saturday at 2 p.m., we reach into all the neighborhoods of the local real estate market and talk our way through appraisals, financing, inspections, offers, closings, with all kinds of real estate experts. Join me, Renee Mello, for Open House Radio Saturday, 2 p.m. on KSCO.
Back, KSCO 1080, 479-1080. Is that the correct number? Right on. There you go. I'm new here. Obviously, this is Scott Gold filling in for Michael Zwirling. I'm with Rick Ely. We're talking about some of the hidden, I would say, what do you call them, hidden pitfalls of law enforcement that we don't like to talk about.
Right. They're the negative aspects of the job. There's some that have profound impact on careers.
As a street officer, would you ever, and you're one of the tougher guys that I know from being on the streets in Oakland, and would you have ever brought up the fact that you were feeling some of these stresses to any of your officers? Would you have ever had the gone and said, you know what, I'm not feeling good, or it was prohibited, especially back in the 70s?
Yeah, and when I started, I went to state college in the 60s and took law enforcement, and guys pretty much emphasized that tough persona, and there was not a lot of emphasis on it, though we were in a college setting, so it was discussed. On the street, it wasn't discussed much, and if you look at law enforcement in the 60s and 70s, it was a lot of returning military. In my era, it was coming back from Vietnam, and the era before that, it was Korea and World War II. And it was not the recognition of this post-traumatic stress stuff. There wasn't the recognition nor the acceptance. You were a tough guy, you did a tough job, and you're expected to perform. And that's it, because they came back from the military, that military bearing, it carried over into a paramilitary organization like police work. So no, it wasn't recognized, and it certainly wasn't treated, and you weren't encouraged at that time, 40 years ago, even 30 years ago, to really discuss it. And then, of course, we got smart. We started to look at these symptoms. We started looking at the impact in the workforce, and we realized we're no different than the military and the other folks that are exposed to a variety of traumatic circumstances, and they needed help, and they do need help.
Yeah, and I think that we're actually going to take a call from JT here, but let's see what JT has to say. Hold on 1 second. JT, you there?
Gentlemen.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for your service in law enforcement. Appreciate it.
Right on.
My father was in law enforcement for a number of years, and I won't say I'm old, but I've been around. And I have to say, when I was younger, when you would wave to an officer, he would wave to you, and he would smile at you. Here in Watsonville, where I live, about 80% of the time, I'm at a stoplight, I'm on my bike, I wave to an officer, he waves to me, smiles at me, I feel comfortable, I feel protected. I don't feel like I'm going to come into an incident with the officer just because I waved to him. Now, on the north part of the county, there's three agencies. And two of them, if you wave at the officer, 9 times out of 10, they're going to turn around and follow you for a while and perhaps pull you over, and I'll say one of them's not Santa Cruz PD. Capitola and Scotts Valley seem to be very aggressive, and I don't know why. I don't know whether it's been ingrained in them. But what happens is people wave to the firefighters, and the firefighters wave back. It's an extension of that group. And this morning, I said hello to an officer, and he just looked at me like, what's wrong with this guy? Just a half hour ago, I was on my bike. And so I'm thinking that it's not so much people don't like the officers, but it appears to the people that the officers don't like the people.
Yeah, I'd hate to... they're individuals, and that's kind of the story behind this. They are people, again. And I know I was a Capitola cop. I would have bad days, but I would still try to smile and wave at everybody. I was out there for the people. I had my own agenda, so to speak. I was probably too nice. Chief Ely could probably say that. I'd pull people over. I wouldn't give them enough tickets, maybe. I don't know. But they're individuals. Unfortunately, maybe some of the cops will listen to this and start smiling and waving. I don't, that's part of the stresses of the job. They should be smiling and waving. They do work for the community. Capitola has in the 80% acceptance rate. with the community. It's amazing. Scotts Valley is up there too. Santa Cruz, which you say they're smiling, waving. I live in Santa Cruz and know a lot of the officers there. But they have a really low acceptance rate, which is interesting. You know, where they have the highest acceptance rate, I will agree with you on that to a certain degree, that I think that is a lot. The officers are a lot harder in Scotts Valley and Capitola. Yeah, they get stuff done and they're pretty serious, but it doesn't make it acceptable to not smile and wave at anybody. Right. Nice gesture, you know, even a nod or hey, what's up?
Yeah, you know, anything like that. And I just want to chime in. The acceptance rate is by the local community, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so see, you have your local community, and God bless you. I served Capitola. I worked on the Capitola computer system for many years.
Oh, yeah,
wonderful,
I know you.
Wonderful people, okay?
Yeah.
And inside the office. But it seems like, and they joke and do the gallows humor and everything else, and it was all cool. We're all good. But once they step out that door, they change. And so the acceptance rate is because the local people are seeing them extract income from strangers, keep the strangers down and under control, make sure that the strangers don't cause any problems, and God bless them. I wouldn't want any problems on my street. I live on a really great street. Matter of fact, I take care of the problems on my street. So, anyway, I can appreciate that. Just a tip.
The firefighters wave,
and the police don't, and it just, you know, people won't wave to you if you don't.
JT, it's not falling on deaf ears, because Rick here has got a foundation we're going to talk about.
And right on.
One of the things he can address there in the foundation is
that. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, JT.
Thank you, JT.
Be safe. Bye.
All right, we're going to go to Richard in Watsonville. Richard, are you there?
I'm right here.
Right on, Richard. Scott.
Thank you for taking my call. And your guest, he mentioned he was in the military for 6 months?
Right. Reserves. What? 6 years, but I served 6 months in Louisiana. Did my basic in AIT.
Amazing. What service?
National Guard, California.
That's a whole different animal than actual real military, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know the difference between a war pig and a street pig? You come out of that era, out of the 60s era, where everybody was saying off with the pigs, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And they did the same thing with our returning military during the Vietnam conflict.
I never had that happened to me, but I heard about them spitting on them and calling them baby killers.
Right, exactly.
We killed a lot of babies, though. A lot of women, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are going to talk about divorces?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you been divorced?
Never.
Scott?
Never. I got married before.
You guys ever think about suicide?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Homicide?
Do I think about homicide?
We know you guys got depression.
Mm-hmm.
And you're speaking about PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure if you really know what PTSD even means.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome?
It doesn't.
What's it mean?
And post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay, disorder. Okay.
Guy like me, I'm beyond stressed. Mm-hmm. I'm stretched. But then again, I'm not a cop.
Right.
And I wonder sometimes about these guys that become chiefs of police, and they all of a sudden they're deputy chief of police. They got 2 stars on their lapels, on their colors. They become chiefs. They get 4 stars. Well, they don't work up the ranks. 1, 2, you know what I'm talking about there, Rick? I mean,
yeah.
E1, E2, E3, it's like E2,
you
4, 6.
You do. You start, police officer generally, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, deputy chief.
There's a lady chief over in Pacific Grove.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 5-star. What the hell's going on with 5-star?
I have no idea, brother.
Is she doing a good job? Community like her? I mean, what does the stars really matter?
I don't know if that matters any more than Grant Bowles, the guy that was the head of the CHP here. I don't know if he's still running the CHP here or not. But he got on this radio station one day and said that he don't have to wear his seatbelt. He can drive around talking on his cell phone because he's exempt.
Well, we're not doing this program to to slam people or slam cops.
Well, it's not
cops.
A matter of slamming people,
well, I know, but
it's
we're
a
trying to deal with some of the
you guys
some
are
of the stigma,
against.
Some of the stigma between the officers and being able to figure out why they fall into this dark hole here.
Is it a dark hole? Does it really feel like a dark hole if you have never been divorced? Well, I got three under my belt.
Well, divorce is only one small part of it.
Yeah, but listen, Scott, I can go from suicide to homicidal thoughts instantly.
Okay.
I know how to solve a problem, and that brings me to my question.
Go ahead. I've been waiting with bated ears.
Okay. Why is it, or why should we continue dealing with people like you and your guest when we could bring the military in here, declare martial law, have no problems amongst religions or education or immigration or drunk driving or homelessness problems?
Be careful what you wish for.
No, banksters and gangsters and terrorists. Now, all those can be controlled. All those problems are solvable, and you guys haven't taken on one of them yet, and you want us to feel sorry for you? Why shouldn't we go to martial law? That's my question. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I don't actually think I want you to feel sorry for me.
Well, no, you're wanting me to feel sorry for you.
No,
or
I don't.
Or you wouldn't be here talking about how depressing it is to be a policeman.
No, I don't think I want you to feel sorry for me, Richard. I actually kind of feel sorry for you.
Well, you shouldn't. Because I know how to solve problems.
All right.
And you guys don't seem to solve problems. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having these Department of Corrections where people don't get corrected. I mean,
where you're headed is that we're actually part of the problem now.
No, we're... Oh, yeah. You're not really part of the problem. You're in the way.
So we actually...
You're in the way. and I know the way to safe flying airports, trains, and buses... It's through martial law.
Well, I hear you on the radio a lot, Richard, and you got a lot of answers, and I think you should try to actually implement some of this stuff instead of just...
Martial law will bring order, peace, tourism, and business.
All right, I've got callers stacked up here. I'm going to let you go, Richard.
Okay,
it looks like we got, I want to say, Clyth in Santa Cruz. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Good morning.
My name is Clive.
Clive.
I was in the Marine Corps Reserves during the late 60s and early 70s, and there was a very strong anti-war climate in the Bay Area, and mainly in large cities. But it wasn't that way in areas like the South and the rural areas.
Right.
And they were threatening. I didn't see any combat myself, and they were threatening to call us up all the time. And, they didn't like you. Everybody that had their hair down to their butt, and we had to keep our hair short. And it was a difficult time to serve during that particular time. But we served, and, we went through boot camp just like the regular guys did and went through the same indignities. And we came out. I came out fine. So I just thought I'd tell you that.
Great. Well, and appreciate your service, too. And that's another thing that, we still have officers that are serving, and it seems like a lot of people are upset about that because, obviously some of the stuff that we're doing right now is questionable. And why are we spending all this money and time?
Yeah. Well, after World War II.
But it also doesn't take away from the fact that these are good people serving. Again, it's kind of that same sort of thing that these guys are willing to put their life on the line every
day.
Right.
I have great respect to the police and the fire department. I really do. And they always wave to me.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. Great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Clyde. We're going to go to Robert. It's been holding for quite a while here. Let me get Robert on the air. Robert, Santa Cruz.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Thank you for taking my call.
No
Very
problem.
Good conversation. The top of the issue is I give my hands-off respect to the Santa Cruz police that are controlling this area that is so full of homeless degenerates. And I have recently become one due to divorce in that situation, with the financial situation. Unfortunately, I had to check into what's called this homeless shelter in Carl Street, which is very uncomfortable. Yet, when I ride my bike through in the morning when I have to be kicked out at 6:30 a.m., I see these homeless people and the police that are dealing with them, and they're filthy. They throw trash all over the place. They don't clean up after themselves. And the police are very respectful of that. They do what they have to do. They need to clean up this town, especially during the what's coming into the peak tourism season of Santa Cruz.
Which is difficult because this is also a community issue now, which work hand in hand with the community speaks out, city council acts, it goes down to the police department.
Right.
This is an issue that I feel like half the people want to look away from and still complain about. You know what I mean? This is a tough issue in Santa Cruz. This is one that's I think is getting worse and not better. And it's how, again, the cops are the people out there trying to keep it clean. And that's a tough spot to be in, especially when you have your orders.
Yes, it is a tough spot to be in.
For both sides
over and
for your side
again,
too, no disrespect.
Where they are polite. They're respectful over the situation of these tramps, excuse my expression, that are living under the bridge, that are sleeping along the side of San Lorenzo River and making trash and not keeping this town. What they're trying to do is clean up the town. That's what they're told to do by the city council, right? That's their job.
Yeah. With certain limitations. The law enforcement can do a lot of wonderful things, but they're also limited certainly by the community's acceptance and tolerance levels. And when things get really, really bad, obviously your tolerance level goes down and there's a call for stricter enforcement. But the police officers everywhere, and Santa Cruz is no exception, they take their lead from the city leaders, the city fathers, the city manager, and they are the ones that set the standards, quite frankly, that the police officers have to work under. Because if they get too aggressive or too proactive, they're not going to be supported by the political
process. Well, yeah, they'll probably have some lawsuits going on.
It's a double-edged sword, yeah. Because now the community's down on you, or the city politics get down,
right.
Politicians get down on you. How do you dance in that little area? You know, it's like dancing on the head of a pin.
And as I have heard through the grapevine of this area with these homeless people, is that northern Midwestern states, would give these distraught people one-way tickets to Santa Cruz. Hey, go out to the orange tree.
I've heard that, but I don't think we've ever been able to quite prove it yet.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to prove. There's still one of the biggest issues down there, and I think it starts with the city council, because I think that me being a citizen of Santa Cruz, I have a different agenda than they do, and most of my friends and family that live there do too. And I don't think that we are heard in that situation, which goes back to a whole nother subject of districting. We're going to have to break here in a minute. I want districting in Santa Cruz so that we can actually get some of these issues handled correctly where we, you know, in each area. So we're going to have to break. We're going to come
and
back.
And I do have an immense amount of respect for the police.
Awesome.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to come back with Kathleen Scott, a couple
Thank
others.
You.
This is KSCO 1080 479-1089.
I'm Andy, the produce manager at Ben Lomond Market. This week we are featuring California white corn in the husk, 3 for 99 cents, and California apricots, $2.99 a pound. The corn is sweet and tender, and the apricots are full of flavor. Melons. We have sweet cantaloupe, 57 cents a pound, yummy honeydews, 2 for $4, and whole sweet seedless watermelons, 29 cents a pound. All these beauties are from Mexico and are eating great. In organics, we are featuring California Haas avocados, $1.49 each, and organic red leaf and green leaf lettuce, 99 cents each. New items, California yellow and white peaches and California yellow nectarines have arrived. So come and check out our great selection of fresh produce at Ben Lomond Market and Scotts Valley Market.
Do you know the fastest way to lift your spirits? Light a candle, add a little warmth and beauty to your home or office. A candle is a candle is a candle, right? Nope. There's paraffin, there's soy, and now something new. Gourmet candles made by Longevity's new partner, Isola Luce, with 100% pure palm oil. Palm wax is denser than soy, so it burns longer. Isola Luce candles do not use dyes or wicks with lead. They're made with cotton wicks and natural oils, so they burn cleaner. These candles are so fragrant, you don't even have to light them. I like exotic flower scents like Maui plumeria and freesia with tuberose. You might prefer ocean breeze, pineapple and vanilla sugar, or one of many other choices. These are classy candles you'll be proud to show off or give as gifts. Each candle comes nestled in a satiny box. Call us now, toll-free, 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of the Costa Report. These days, you have a lot of radio programs to choose from, but here's why I'm asking you to turn your dial every Friday at 2 p.m. to KSCO. Because at some point, talk show hosts have got to stop raging, pontificating, and finger-pointing as if they're all auditioning for the Jerry Springer Show. That's right. In order to start solving our problems, we're going to have to tell our inner child to pipe down so our inner adult can take care of business. So join me every Friday at 2 p.m. right here on KSCO for the Costa Report.
KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Are you going to take me home tonight? Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you going to let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round.
I almost started singing there. Like James Durbin, I was just going to let one out, and then I thought, man, I can't even hit that note. It's going to sound terrible. I'd love to start singing. I'm so, I hate to say reserved in here, because I have a kind of like a problem with swearing. So I got to think about it. The filter is on all the time, and when I say I have a problem with swearing, I mean I have a problem with swearing. So I've constantly got to think about what I'm doing. I do some shows on Sirius, and it's in a couple of the other podcasts, and it's the opposite, where you can say whatever you want, and then I'm filtered the other way, so it's really difficult for me. This is Scott D. Gold, Rick Ely, sitting in for Michael Zwirling today on the Saturday special. Feel free to call in, 479-1080. We're take any kind of questions, and we're talking basically about cops and that they're people and they make mistakes. They have to live, you know, basically from all the studies I read, they got to live as a cop 24 hours a day, even though they don't try to. And, you know, society basically puts them on a pedestal, which is, I'll tell you, is impossible to live as a perfect person. There's no way.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, we are reviled and then heroes. And the fact is, take a look at primetime television, and over the years, probably 40-50% of primetime television in one way or another has dealt with cop shows. Have been extremely popular. Now it's CSI. It always basically comes back to law enforcement, and yeah, it's a very small segment
and heroic. Like, yeah, wow, we did the lab test.
It's a lot more glamorous.
Well, I could tell you what, I walked in and they hit me with this newspaper article, and look at this, and it's all negative. I could tell you hundreds of times where I was doing something, and this is great, great police work, I would say, and couldn't wait till the morning to see the newspaper, to see this, you know, cop saves city. It's not. It's the if it bleeds, it leads type thing. And most of the time, they're looking for the cops that do something wrong.
Good press doesn't sell. No. It's the negative that sells.
I know, it's sad. We're gonna go to Kathleen in Santa Cruz. Kathleen, good morning.
Hi. I'm really enjoying your program this morning. I was doing dishes, listening to you guys, and I felt just so compelled to call in because I come from a family of cops. My brother is a sergeant in Illinois, and my other brother is ex-canine and ex-undercover narcotics. I know a lot of policemen for a lot of years, and the stories they've told me, you know, have kept me up at night. And the things, what I've never understood is the people that don't show policemen the respect I feel they deserve. And I think as a public, we have just a large part of the public has decided to not acknowledge what policemen go through every day and the danger that does lurk around every corner of every day. You know, you never know what the day is going to bring. And what I've found is the people that don't respect policemen are usually the bad guys, or, you know, I have some warped image of...
Well, I agree and disagree in some respects. I noticed this early on. I'd walk into a restaurant, and what do the parents do with their little kids? They'd look up and say, oh, see, you better stop doing what you're doing. Don't act up. This guy is going to come and arrest you. They do that all the time. Every time I'd go into a restaurant, they'd do that.
And you know, that's funny because, you know, I'm a parent, and my children see policemen, and I say, look, that's a policeman, you know. He's protecting us. He's making this, you know, making the world a safer place for us. You know, on the flip side, I have a brother. Both my brothers won't sit with their back to the door. You know, my brothers carry guns 24/7 because they don't know when they're going to encounter problems that they need to respond to. You know, I think that it's a shame.
You can only imagine the stuff they don't tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's beyond what you could imagine.
Yeah.
The things, you know, because I have heard of many stories and, you know, just horrendous things that I can't even, you know, it literally keep me up at night.
And this isn't, and like Richard said, we're not looking for sympathy. We're just trying to open up some of this stuff and
reality.
It's a chosen profession. It's a profession that I noticed that could be pulled from you at any minute. Mm-hmm. And it's a serious profession. I took it very seriously. I wore the badge with pride. I did everything I could as far as community policing and being a part of the community. I you know, we were trained in that. It was awesome. I have kids still coming up, and I say kids because they're grown up now, but they're still kids to me, and they thank me for being so open with them, or caring, or and taking the time to understand where they were coming from. It happens all the time, and so I feel good. It's 20 years or 10-15 years later. Mm-hmm. But it's still like, hey, I remember you're the one that took me aside, and you kept giving me chances, and you kept giving me a route to go.
Right.
That's the good part of it. The bad part of it is, right, you're dealing with criminals a lot of the time. You're dealing with some pretty disgusting stuff.
Right. And you know, I just really have the utmost respect for, you know, policemen, firefighters, and nurses. Those are my top three. In that order,
right on.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's true.
Round of applause, yes. Nikki. Oh, you don't have those buttons. That'd be cool. Yay. Right on. Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Sure.
We're going to go over to Scott, who's been waiting quite a while.
Thanks.
Thank you. Scott from Boulder Creek.
God bless the nurses. When I was little, cops were the guys you went to, you know, when you got lost. And maybe when the cop car was behind you, you had a warm feeling, you know, you're protected. You know, this isolation and depression, I can see that their job is to control people with power. And I think that they go home and try that in relationships, perhaps, and it simply just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said that you're trying to compartmentalize. Yeah, people, and go down to their level to get a confession. You know, first of all, I don't know why you guys need a confession. Let the facts speak for themselves. Soliciting confession is an outright violation of Miranda rights in the first place. And also, I think people maybe get up and walk away because they're afraid. You know, maybe on parole, they're drinking alcohol, I don't know, or probation. And, you know, I've learned from a black friend of mine, you know, he used to tell me, don't make eye contact with cops. I learned that's true. It's better not to, because unlike nurses who are here to save our lives, you know, psychologically and physically, the police are in an adversarial position. People fear cops, and fear always leads to hate.
Man, if someone doesn't ever look me in the eyes, I don't trust them.
Yeah, no, but, you know,
like, what what's up with this guy?
You know, the purpose of law is to protect my rights.
Mm-hmm.
And a police state versus martial law, I'm 100% on board with Richard. I hate the police state, and that's where cops have all this you know, outrageous power. And a martial law, nobody has any power. Just what they do is they make, you know, it's the military, it's the Marines that make sure there's
no.
Well,
I want to go back to your Miranda issues because waiving your Miranda rights, we don't once at that point,
yeah,
you get the right to an attorney.
Your statement
else.
Relative to Miranda. Getting confessions, we solve a lot of crimes through confessions. We solve a lot of crimes through physical evidence and real evidence and other things. But we weren't suggesting that you get down to their level or that you...
It's the way they look at you. It's not like you're not a person. They're trying to trap you. Even if you're a wonderful person, did nothing wrong. And, you know, I'm not saying anything about you guys. I'm sure you're
Well, there's another side to this. You need to be educated on your own to know your rights. People are blown away because I know Rick and I know myself. We know our rights. So if we're out in public and a cop comes up to us and asks us, hey, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm doing this. What's in the car? I tell them two seats and a steering wheel. It's none of their business.
Yeah, I'm don't let them search.
Well, you
don't
need to know your rights. That's part of being a citizen of the U.S. Right. You need to know your rights, and people need to educate themselves to those rights and make sure you live within those.
The toolsforfreedom.com has a lot of the rights that we have. And one further thing, the Santa Cruz County deputies, to me, are vicious, adversarial bastards every time I've ever crossed their path. Now, there's many exceptions I've run into, especially a couple of female, deputies who are really, really wonderful. But there's a few really, really corrupt ones, Nielsen, Christensen, and Coyne. I've talked to people who've never done drugs, who've been beaten severely, had guns pulled on them by some of these bastards. This is like 20, 30 years ago, 10, 20 years ago.
And again, you're compartmentalizing the SO in the sense you said there's a couple ladies. You like the nurses, too. I get that.
I love doctors and nurses.
Yeah, I know you like the nurses. You said it right off the bat.
Well,
but also, there's a lot of good deputies out there that really care and are trying to do a good job. You know, you get they're people. This is all a group of people.
However, the bad ones make the whole barrel rotten.
Well,
I think Richard's right. We should think about martial law and study. It doesn't mean a police state. It means the military makes sure that there's no drugs going on or illegal guns.
No, they can't do it now. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we need the military.
You've got martial law in Mexico right now.
They had it in South Korea. It doesn't interfere. Japan is kind of like that.
Yeah, they're doing a great job in Mexico right now.
No, they don't have martial law. Send in our Marines and we'll take care of those drugs.
Okay. Oh, God.
Right.
I spend a lot of time in Mexico, so I'm going to say I'm down there at least once a week or once every other week. No, they are not. The Marines couldn't do anything down there. It'd be like sending them to Afghanistan. They don't even know where there'd be so many
Well,
they would go through there and be killing all kinds of civilians.
Were we letting our own guns go down there to see what they? And one of them goes shot. One of those guns traced the murder of a border guard. What kind of BS is that?
Again, there's a lot of good SO deputies doing a great job.
Yeah, I know that.
You can't let one or two
bad apples.
And we got to look at the positive side of this and how do we get more, like you said. Cops smiling and waving
right.
at people and
it's not
going
to work if we're afraid to make eye contact.
Well, you're afraid to make eye contact. I'm not afraid to make eye contact.
It's like the social workers. There's social workers who love us, you know, and are at the hospitals, and then there's the CPS who are trying to.
I'm going to take one more caller because we're at the end of the hour. Thank you, Scott. I'm going to go to Larry in Newark. Larry, good morning. KSCO. Larry, you there?
I think Larry's gone.
Larry, I hear you. I hear him.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Hi.
Scott?
Yeah,
Rick Ely?
I want to apologize for my cell phone. I have the worst cell phone in the world.
You and me both.
Probably sounds really crappy. I want to talk about my experiences growing up in a town called Fremont. You know about Fremont?
Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm gonna hold you over. Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
We're gonna go to the top of the hour. Can you hang on and
sure.
I wanna hear about Fremont and all that. Just give me
a
minute. They were very strict with me. They said when about 30 seconds before the top of the hour, I better be cutting it down here. So let me put you on hold one more time.
We'll
be right back to you. All right, this is Scott Gold and Rick Ely at KSCO filling in for Michael Zwirling. Feel free to call in 479-1080. We're at KSCO Santa Cruz.
Your source for news, sports, traffic, and weather. AM 1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, and Monterey.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel. The Army Corps of Engineers in Louisiana says it will be opening the Morganza Spillway in just a few hours. The state will deliberately flood smaller towns to save Baton Rouge and New Orleans from a flood that would make Katrina look second rate.
The U.S. Army Corps reminds residents yearly on its website and with written notices. Tulane University geographer Richard Campanella says it is a well-known fact among people living in the Atchafalaya Basin because back in the 50s, when the federal government built the spillway, the government paid the landowners for that perpetual right.
The government purchased from them an easement or a right to store water on this floodplain, which is another way of saying of flooding it. So landowners in this area would then be cognizant that the U.S. government has that right.
He says after the deals, many people continued to take that calculated risk of investing and living in the upper part of the basin.
That's Liz Reyes with our New Orleans affiliate, WVUE-TV. The parliament in Pakistan passing a resolution hitting the United States for the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. That resolution calls the raid an attack on Pakistan's sovereignty. The resolution also criticizing the U.S. for missile strikes in the tribal areas of Pakistan. In his weekly address, President Obama says domestic oil production should be ramped up, as should alternative ways of fueling.
The American people shouldn't be subsidizing oil companies at a time when they're making near record profits. As a nation, we should be investing in the clean, renewable sources of energy that are the ultimate solution to high gas prices.
Republicans in their weekly response say the president needs less talk and more action.
The president promoted Brazilian-made energy in Brazil while his administration keeps our resources here at home under lock and key.
Alabama Representative Martha Roby. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Some people would call him a loser. He ran for state office. He was beaten. He started a business. He failed. He ran for Congress. He lost. He was nominated for vice president. He lost again. But he knew only those who never tried are the real losers. And Abraham Lincoln was no loser. Persistence. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Judge Napolitano is on the case, policing big government, exposing bureaucrats, safeguarding your rights.
The Constitution was written to limit the government. When politicians cross that line, I'll be there.
The judge is taking the toughest issues head on. Exclusive interviews, hard-hitting investigations. The one show delivering a message straight to D.C.'s power players.
From Capitol happenings to Supreme Court surprises, we're in the middle of it all.
Catch Freedom Watch weeknights at 8 Eastern, only on Fox Business, the power to prosper.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling with more on last week's commentary about political correctness.
Moving along, political correctness has fostered a nation of wimps and victims. People do not take responsibility for their behavior. It's much easier to let someone else or the government bail them out. How about the elderly woman who held her cup of hot coffee between her thighs while driving, scalded her legs, then took McDonald's to court, sued for damages, and won? Also, the lifelong smoker who developed lung cancer, blamed and then sued the tobacco company, and was awarded millions. Victimhood has become a lucrative art. Now, greedy, unethical lawyers are initiating frivolous lawsuits, all with the help of politically correct juries, and especially condoned by politically correct judges who lack the backbone to rule rationally. Liberal and extreme judges must take responsibility for enabling our judicial system to become political and grossly unfair. These extreme judges and lawyers are surely in the minority, but it only takes a few rotten apples to ruin the entire barrel. One could go on and on about the abuses and havoc generated by political correctness. It's really tiresome that these PC lefties are always offended. Now the word Christmas no longer can be mentioned in the public school system. can't say God either, and the Ten Commandments are banned from all schools and all public buildings. Our national moral fiber is wearing very thin. In a subsequent commentary, we will discuss more about the excesses perpetrated by political correctness and finish with the full text of the amazing Bill of No Rights. Stay tuned for KSCO. This is Case Whirling.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. Partly cloudy with a high of 63 today. The west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And we do have a 70% chance of rain tonight. It's probably going to rain about a quarter inch. And we're going to have a low of 48. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy, few showers, high of 61. Southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And out there on the Monterey Bay, west winds 5 to 10 knots. The wind waves less than 2 feet. West swell 4 to 6 feet at 11 seconds. And tonight out there, southwest winds 5 to 10 knots. Wind waves will be less than 2 feet. West swell 3 to 5 feet at 11 seconds. There will be showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. Sunday, southwest winds 5 to 15 knots. Wind waves 1 to 3 feet. West swell 3 to 5 feet at 10 seconds. Showers are likely with slight chance of thunderstorms. Current temperatures, let's see here. We've got Salinas at 56. It's 55 degrees in Watsonville, 53 in Monterey, and we're at 55 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios. And for your KSCO King of the Hill traffic update, nothing to report at this time. If you see something out there, you can call me at 475-1080. The official time is 11:07 and 4 seconds on this Saturday, May 14th. Up next, the second hour of this Saturday special with Scott Gold filling in for MZ. Here we go.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but... But you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
All right, hour number two. We're picking it up. We have some callers on hold, and we're ready to talk more about cops or people, too.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO. Bye.
Awesome. Here we are. I'm glad to hear the frogs cleared up. I think mine are gone, too. I'm actually excited to hear that it might rain tomorrow, too. It'll clear me from my duties with the wife and the home projects, possibly. Oh, it's raining. I can't do that. Might free me up so I can go back to work. Let's get back... Rick, let's get back with Larry and hear about Fremont. Larry from Newark.
Hi.
How you doing, buddy? Sorry for that.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Yeah, you know, I don't know how universal my experiences are if it would apply to other towns. But, you know, as a young man in Fremont, 20s, 30s years old, you know, I didn't have a car. I'd walk everywhere, right? And what bothered me about the police was this sort of predatory nature they had, that they would stop you because you were walking, not for doing anything suspicious, because you were walking. Now, don't criminals have cars?
here's one of the things.
They do.
Larry,
I mean, I understand you kind of stick out because you're walking.
I think people need to understand, and Rick can fill in on the blanks where I don't know, because he's more involved being a chief. And this is what happens. The city, the community says, hey, we have a problem. They complain about it. It goes to the city council. The city council says, hey, this is what we need to address. This is where we're having problems. Be more interactive. I've been out there. I've been on the street, and they said, hey, we have a lot of people doing this, this, and this. Be more interactive. Can you go out? Can you do this? Is that correct? And then they go to the police chief and say, look, we need this. You need to look at this. And then they step it up. Because if you're getting, if there was a lot of problems, they complain to the city, what would they say? Hey, you need to back off on that.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know your situation. It's Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the circumstances, what the time of day, what, you know. But in this, you know, the last 20 years, unfortunately, we're now emphasizing pedestrian-friendly cities and that type of thing. For many years, we got away from it. You'd go next door, you'd get in your car and drive to your next-door neighbor's house. So we've seen the fallacy of that, and it's ridiculous. But maybe it made you stand out. That's all that I could say. Maybe they were having a particular issue or problem in the area you lived or you regularly walked with criminal activity. There's something, you know, these are individuals, but they're highly trained. There's something that made you stand out, I would say, or individuals that are stopped are generally stopped for a reason.
Well, you know, I would ask them, why are you stopping me? And they would say, this is a high crime area. But I noticed they would say that in many different parts of town.
Mm-hmm.
So one time I finally asked the policeman, is there any part of Fremont that's not a high crime area? And he said no. So essentially,
hey,
it was an
excuse. Stop smarting off. That's what he probably said. Hey, don't get smart with me.
Yeah,
back in the day.
I don't know. Maybe they were bored, Larry. I don't know. But, I mean, they really should have some reasonable suspicion or probable cause before
they stopped. Were they respectful
you?
And they did stop you? Did they?
No. That's the other thing that bothers me. And you know, I always consider myself to be someone that was on the same side of the police. I'm against crime.
I would have just kept walking.
But I never remember even once being treated like anything but a suspect. I never remember them saying, you know, there was an incident over here. Do you have any information about it? Could you help us with this? You know, never. They never did that.
Did you ever complain?
They always jam you up, search you, act like you were some kind of criminal just for walking down the street.
Right.
And again, I got to think if you're like a burglar or something, you have a car to carry away your loot.
Did you ever complain about it?
You'd be a walking criminal. That walking makes you more likely to be a criminal.
Yeah, easier to stop. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well,
than someone in a car.
Yeah.
Hey, did you ever complain? No,
I just thought it was normal.
Yeah, but as a citizen, Larry, I would encourage you to complain because you know. In my other life, I've done internal affairs, both for Oakland as internal affairs commander, and for the state. That was my job. We looked into employee misconduct, both, you know, regular misconduct and criminal misconduct, and did literally thousands of investigations when you have 50,000 employees. But, you know, it's sometimes you have to be pulled back, reined in a little bit. We call it KETA, kicked in the arse. Officers, like everybody, they're human beings. I think Scott's emphasized this, this whole show. They learn from their experiences and they start doing things and they start stereotyping and they really shouldn't do that, but they do it because they're human beings. So, you know, if something like that happens again or you're aware of it and you truly believe there's no justification for the stop, then complain. It's a simple matter.
I don't want to give the police a hard time. You know, I just want to get...
Why? They're giving you a hard time.
I just want them to do their jobs and catch criminals and leave me alone.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to complain is the key to this. It's simple. It's, you know, why are they always doing this? You know, and it gets addressed. Larry, I'm going to let you go. We got a board stacked up. You're welcome. Thank you. Before I jump on with Jim in San Bernardino, I was really thinking in my head. I was like, man, I want to hear someone call in and say, first time caller, long time listener, but it's not on the air that often, so it won't really work. It's be like Rush Limbaugh or something. Yeah. Jim from San Benito County. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Hey, my dad was a homicide investigator for the sheriff's office when Santa Cruz County was known as the murder capital of the world.
Oh, yeah.
And You know, I remember them being called pigs during the Berkeley riots and all that. My dad gave me a belt buckle when I was a kid that said patience, integrity, and guts.
Right. I have one of those.
I always wore it, and I still have it to this day. But I think a lot of people don't realize that the horror some officers go through. I can think of in the 70s when John Lindsay Frazier and Mullins and Kemper hit Santa Cruz County, and knowing what Chief Medina from Watsonville, when he was a sergeant with the sheriff's office with my dad, and Chief Belgard, who was at that time in the district attorney's office, the terrible sights these men all saw and how they were able to function. And I believe the general public just never thinks about that. And I hope that they would think about what police officers and firefighters do see all the time. I mean, my dad told me when I was growing up, he said, do not become a cop. He says, become a firefighter, and I did. And I had a great career, and I was very fortunate. But that's my point today is that, hey, people need to understand what you guys go through and what you've seen. And I also concur with your other caller that, hey, you know what, you need to complain. If you have a problem, complain. I had a problem here a couple years ago, and the sheriff's office in Monterey County did an excellent job, and they totally did what they had to do, and I felt very comfortable going down there and talking to them. And I believe that that's part of community policing. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you very
much. Right on. Thank you, Jim. That was great. We're going to go to Marcella in Salinas. Marcella, good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
KSCO. First-time caller, long-time listener. Marcella, go ahead.
There's about 2,000 cases of supposedly shaken baby syndrome. I don't think law enforcement is trained properly in that. If someone calls up about a very young child that's in distress, and if that baby eventually dies from all the drugs given to that baby, the women are usually pitted against the men,
mm-hmm.
and the conclusion is always shaken baby syndrome. They don't look for dual diagnosis. Thousands of people are victims because of the lack of training of police officers. They're sent to prison, and they're like the lowest run in the prison population because they're thought of as baby killers.
What's your experience with the this shaken baby syndrome?
Okay, well, I know of some cases where the gentleman called the police. His girlfriend's baby was in distress. After 3 days of being filled up with drugs by the hospitals and smoking the Medi-Cal, the baby died. And mm-hmm. he had, like, if he had been guilty, he could have left three separate times. Okay, the point is, he's sitting in jail for 2 years here in Monterey County. He's not the only one. There's thousands of these cases that are never investigated into. They never check the vaccine records.
So the father of the baby?
That's not, it was the
boyfriend.
Okay, I don't want to single out on this case.
Okay, I know. I'm trying to get where you're headed here.
It was the boyfriend. It's usually the boyfriend, the babysitter. Something happens to a very young child. There's an automatic conclusion of shaken baby syndrome. There's supposed to be, that's like a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to even talk to the public defenders. They don't want to hear it.
So you're saying that they just say it's shaken baby syndrome?
Yeah, yeah. Even if there's fractures involved, that is a symptom of vaccine reaction. Now, the U.S. is like 39th in the list of infant mortality behind most third world nations. And most people don't even know that 10,000 babies supposedly die of SIDS every year. And there's like 53,000 babies every year, the amount of those that were killed in Vietnam. But every year, 53,000 babies are in hospice because they die of cancer. Okay, they are protecting the vaccine. All vaccines carry a risk of injury or death, but that is not acknowledged in this country.
Okay.
Have you ever had any experience? We're
going to actually segue into here, training and all that stuff here in a minute when we get off the phone with you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't personally add anything to that just because, you know, I don't know what the training is now. I'm retired, and I don't know what their training as far as, and I don't know if it's even on their radar. And that's what
we
can address.
I know, it's not on the
radar. Well, I know. Yeah. That's what we're going to talk here.
One more thing. Police do not know how to deal with special needs people. very few departments have any training.
As far as
I have a cop once who
because I've had multiple trainings for special needs, mm-hmm. and
well, good.
We've dealt with it on it's part of our training regimen is right. special needs people
well,
and understanding how to identify their needs and be able to you know. So I actually disagree with that. Go ahead.
Well, it's getting better, granted.
Okay. We're at the 20-minute break, Marcella. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I hope you can address
it. Yeah, we're going to address it right after the break.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Margaritas, ocean breezes, high fashion, dinner, dancing, shopping.
Come fly with me. Let's fly, fly away.
This Memorial Day weekend, you can do it all and help out a good cause. Don't miss the Come Fly With Me Spring Gala on Saturday, May 28th at Seascape Resort. All proceeds benefit Children's Hospice and Palliative Care Coalition. Tickets on sale now at childrenshospice.org or call 831-763-3070. Listen to Good Morning Monterey Bay for your chance to win San Jose Sharks playoff tickets.
Brought to you in part by A Tool Shed Rentals. If you use it all the time, buy it. But if you only use it once in a while, rent it from A Tool Shed Rentals, the rental place for contractors and homeowners throughout the South San Francisco and Monterey Bay areas. A Tool Shed Rentals always has the lowest out-the-door prices. A Tool Shed Rentals.
Proud sponsor of the San Jose Sharks.
Hey parents, do kids think you're out of touch because of the way you dress?
Yes.
Well, say hello to instant style with Fashion On. Just spray Fashion On whatever you're wearing and look cool in an instant. Turn orthopedic shoes into vintage high tops, pleated khakis into skinny jeans. Even clip-on ties become fly gold chains. Just spray, let it dry, and presto.
What about my fanny pack?
You mean your hip MP3 player?
Wow.
What about my bifocals?
You mean your hot pink shutter shades?
Hey, I can't see.
But your kids can see you, and trust me, they see fashion.
Thanks, Fashion On.
Fashion On is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Mike Jacoby, inviting you to join me this Saturday for Raising the Standards. We'll talk a little golf with the folks from the Northern California Golf Association, along with our friend Bruce Lewis from Richmark Golf and Country Club. We'll also chat about safe, effective, and easy weight loss with the folks from Dr. Richard German's office in Monterey. Then a buddy of mine, an artist named Lou Birmingham, who's doing a show at the Trident Museum in San Jose. Hey, did I ever tell you about the time I killed the guy with the trident? Maybe that was a pitchfork. That doesn't make any difference to him. It all happens this Saturday, 3 to 5. As we raise the standards only here on KSCO.
All right, we're back. I know I'm trying to make light of a lot of these issues and have fun with it at the same time, but they are very heavy issues here. Now is our chance to talk more about what I would say ex-Chief Ely and some of his partners and some of the things they've done since they actually started before you left, mm-hmm. didn't you, the foundation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Before you left and to try to build this community-based.
That's almost 7 years ago.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So go into that and the foundation and what we're doing with the foundation.
Well, it's like every agency. There's the pros and cons. There's the enforcement side of it, and then there's the outreach and community support building that needs to go on. When I got to Capitola, we assessed the organization. We created a vision and some, our mission statement of a vision and some things that we wanted to accomplish. One of those was to build more contacts and positive contacts with the community. It's easy to focus on the negative, as this show's doing, and we're trying to keep it positive. So we created what we called the Capitola Public Safety Foundation. It's not unlike foundations and support organizations that many, many departments have. Capitola is a small community, but it's heavily impacted by tourists. So what we looked at is expanding our community policing programs, in a time of severe and austere physical limitations. How do you do that? Well, you need support, community support. You need to generate funds. So we did things like the Capitola Rod and Custom Classic Car Show. It's
Which is a huge success. Yes, and a fun event to go to.
Fun event. It's great for the community. It kickstarts our summer. Brings in, you know, 15, 20, 25,000 people into the city. The merchants love it, especially their bars and restaurants. We have a golf tournament, including
the oil companies.
Oh, yeah. including the oil companies. We are able, through this fundraising, we are able to enhance our canine programs, but and a lot of equipment that we just wouldn't have, like an electric car that we got a grant for. But then we went into supporting youth initiatives like the CORE and the Crushers Softball League and the Junior Guards. We fund the Junior Guards and worked with the parents program on that. And, you know, 500-600 kids every year get waterproofed and trained and life-saving. We help fund that and support it. We have our volunteers in policing. We have the CERT program, which is Citizen Emergency Response Teams. And we just, you know, utilize that time after time, most recently with the tsunami and the floods. If you remember the floods we had here in Capitola, it had a really significant impact.
Yeah, and that's based on the whole county. You guys work together hand in hand with
exactly.
the rest of the county.
Exactly. We partnered with the fire department, Central Fire. We have 10 to 12, 15 CERTs. We have about 20 VIPs, which are citizen volunteers. We started an elder care task force and distributed file for life, smoke alarms, and then smoke alarms for the hearing impaired, which has a bright strobe. And then we distributed over 1,100, I think it's more like 1,200 emergency kits in case of, you know, critical incidents. And we have disasters, and many times the seniors are stuck. They're homebound. So we got them kits that they could survive for the first 48 to 72 hours, and we distributed 1,100 or 1,200 of those. And just a host of other things. We helped with build the bandstand down in the Esplanade Park and helped celebrate the city's 60th birthday. And then just the list goes on and on. So we have elder care and elder and seniors issues that we address. We deal with youth. Which is very important. And then we deal with equipment and special needs folks, which was brought up here just by one of the previous callers. And then training needs and a host of other things. So the foundation has been a boon to the department and to the city, and it has assisted us significantly in our route reach because we're in contact constantly with seniors.
The foundation has a lot, anything to do with helping get the Wednesday night concerts and all that going too, with the bandstand?
We do. Really, that's the BIA. The business group has really spearheaded that. But, you know, we are sponsors for various things. We're a big sponsor.
And especially if the listeners have, you know, Wednesday night, the car show.
Right.
You guys supporting that actually goes right back into helping the foundation, helps all the POAs involved in it. I know that. The city helps. But if you can get down Wednesday night and watch those concerts, they're amazing.
Absolutely. Get by the car show. It's going to be June 11th and 12th. It's sold out already. It usually sells out very quickly. But we're going to have, you know, 300, 350 really fantastic specialty cars. We're going to have NASCAR again this year. And everybody loves that. We're going to
do the hot laps.
Yeah, we'll do a hot lap through a very small parking lot.
Oh, you're toning it down. I know what happened when you guys did that the last time. It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
You don't let me drive anything.
No, we're going to keep you on the ground.
Along with that, looking at Capitola, and I know that some of the people, you know, like Scotts Valley comments about Scotts Valley, Capitola. But Capitola has done what I feel that Santa Cruz should do and everything else where you're bringing these events. It's not just that. It's the Art and Wine Festival. You're bringing people in. We obviously are in a tough time now. How has that helped Capitola financially as a city and growing compared to, like, say, for instance, Santa Cruz or that? Where you guys build weekend, weekdays, you build events inside the city, which brings people down spending money and having a good time.
Right.
I feel like we're falling short in Santa Cruz.
Well, I mean, Santa Cruz has natural draws. There's certainly, if you can get organized, there's other opportunities. Capitola's small. It's a, you know, ideal setting, but it's hard. It's impacted by parking. But to have events like the car show that doesn't cost the city anything, we you know, more than pay for the cost of the car show. We bring in the TOT, the transient occupancy tax, and the sales tax. Most of the restaurants report yearly of their biggest days of the year during the car show. Not far behind is the Art and Wine.
Begonia
Festival. The Wharf to Wharf, a very short event, brings in tremendous amount.
Yeah, it's amazing how you guys got it to end in Capitola and not Santa Cruz. You think they'd rotate that back and forth. Yeah, if I was Santa Cruz, I'd be going, hey, can we, this year, can we have it end in the boardwalk? You know, how would that work out?
I don't know. I think it's a
pretty smart run. Yeah, pretty smart, though. You know, if it ended in Santa Cruz, maybe they'd get a little bit of the money.
Yeah, I think it's just traditionally started there, but yeah, you're probably right. But I think they do pretty well in the
morning. Why not a Begonia Festival where they have to run the Begonia floats up to Santa Cruz, you know? Make it a real race.
Right.
Make it a, you know, seaworthy Begonia floats. Something to help Santa Cruz out. It seems like Santa Cruz is stalling out on the tourism. I understand they have the boardwalk and the simple things like that, but it just seems like it could be a real destination. Capitola has done a wonderful job of making it safe. They're beautiful. They take care of the city. You were part of all of that in the back in your regime. You helped on the I think you were on the board for helping redo all the sidewalks, the streets, and help coordinate all that to make sure it went. That was a big project.
As city, you know, we all the department heads in Capitola, quite frankly, during my, you know, 9 years there, worked together remarkably well, I think. Supported each other for the most part. And, you know, we had our weekly meetings, we had our biweekly council meetings, and it was very clear. And I think the difference is, you know, council sets the tone, city manager comes back and reinforces that. They set the policies and the vision. It's your job as a department head to carry it out. So, you know, we wanted to make the city as attractive as possible, given limited resources. And that's why.
And I know you're a huge advocate of, and I've never seen so many grants get written
right
when you showed up to be able to get us the equipment we needed, to be able to get. And I was amazed at how many, you know, I always thought, oh, grants. But you came in and it all changed all of a sudden. Your department heads were right. Writing grants, and we got equipment, we got computers, the whole department changed towards that paperless system that you guys talk about, which I still say is not paperless, but.
Right. It's not. It's not by far. But you're right. Grants are where it was at. Now, of course, if you look at the federal budget and the state budget, what's happening there? They're being more impacted probably than cities to a degree. So once again, what do? You work around it. We've had reductions. We've had furloughs. But you have something like the foundation, or you promote the community. You promote it, as I think Capitola has done and will continue to do, and hopefully you can bring in those additional revenues and get people coming to the city and enjoying themselves, and at the same time helping yeah. with the
We've budget. Got someone on hold here, Margaret.
Let's do it.
From Santa Cruz. Margaret, good morning. Hold on. There you are. Margaret, Santa Cruz, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I haven't quite formulated my question.
Uh-oh. I'll put you on hold then.
But this is what I want to ask you. Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm scared, kind of.
Yeah. Whose responsibility is it to repaint the red curb around town where there's no parking on a red curb because that's a fire...
Fire lane?
Yeah, fire lane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm noticing so many, many... Red curves are so faded, so chipped, so black and dull.
Are you talking Capitola, Santa Cruz, or the county in general?
Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz.
You can't really determine whether that is that a fire lane.
You know, it's funny you say that because I think it was a week ago or something. I was trying to park and I couldn't tell, and it was at dusk, and maybe that's my age. I'm getting older, and I think I got great vision, but I couldn't tell either. I was like, yeah. Is that red or not? And you pull up and you're trying to look at it, and it's not really red. It's like, you can tell it'd been painted, but you don't know.
No. Right.
Well, it's probably your public works department and the fire department. The fire department usually does the inspections, and you might check with the fire department. Once again, everybody's crying budget, but if you have fire lanes, I'm a proponent for them because you want to get safety equipment in and out. But there's also, you know, I got to tell you, there's a revenue generating side of me that says if people are going to start parking there and blocking fire engines, then there's a citation opportunity.
I was on the bottom end of this, but a funny story years ago, I was told by, I won't even mention the name of the guy who's one of the Capitola higher ups. It wasn't Rick, but they told us that at nighttime we'd have to go out and check all the street lights and document what street lights were out, meaning that we'd have to go out at night. I was primarily on graveyard shift, but I'd have to document what pole number if a street light was out and turn it in. You'd be surprised how well, and looking at back then, we'd complain and we're cops, we're not, why are we out here checking street lights? This is ridiculous. So I'd contact the fire department, like you said, Public Works, and say, look, we need this cleaned up. We can't tell. They will put someone on it, and then they will probably call the police and say, hey, if you see one, document it, turn it in. It'll be painted. Mm-hmm. These guys can do this. That's what they do. Yep. It seems like a simple one. I can't believe you had to formulate that, but go ahead with the next question. I'm imagining something really bad.
I couldn't think of what to call the red curve.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to complain about me.
No, not yet. You're doing a good job.
Oh, thank you.
Also,
thanks, Mom.
The tree limbs, they strike and scratch and mar your RV and trucks and stuff. And I think that Santa Cruz is just not very RV friendly.
Well, I'm going to go on another one because I got personal thing on here. I go on walks.
Mm-hmm.
Half the sidewalks you can't walk down because of, I've noticed, there's shrubbery, there's bushes hanging. You can't even walk. You have to like cut into the street or along with that. I don't have an RV, but I have a truck, and you're right. Most of the places you go to park or pull in, it scratches your truck. It's that's how bad the shrubbery. I don't know if that's, and I'm experiencing it with you, Mario. I agree. I don't know if that's Santa Cruz cutting back or because of the budget. You know, we're in a tough time right now.
Yeah.
I'll say that, and I don't know if it's cutbacks or what, but I have noticed it too. I think that people need to keep their stuff cut back on the sidewalks, and it pisses me off because I go to dinner and I walk.
A lot of it, you know, is your inspection team, whoever in your city is responsible for that. Sometimes it's Public Works, it's oftentimes building and planning that look at these things, but whoever it is should report it because it's sometimes nothing more than a telephone call or a letter. The property owner, in many of these instances, it's privately owned properties, and they have to maintain it. It's the same thing you see the fire department right now. They've been heavily involved in grass and brush eradication. We're coming into fire season. So you look at a lot of these private property owners around the county, what are they doing? They're mowing down their weeds and they're rototilling. And the reason they're doing that generally is because they've been contacted by the fire department and told to cut it. If they don't cut it, they get cited. So,
and in Santa Cruz, you are correct. If it is anywhere all the way up to the curb, it is the property owners.
Right.
But sometimes it takes the city to go to the property owner and say, hey, you need to trim this back. You need to fix your sidewalk. You need to do this. I know they switched that years ago. So it is up to the property owner. It does take a letter or a phone call, and it usually gets done, especially if it's a property owner. The city doesn't really give you much leeway when it's your fault. Speaking from experience again. Margaret, is that it?
Well, have any of you seen that brand new circle labyrinth?
God, I was hoping we wouldn't get into that.
Down by the boardwalk, just going, going towards the wharf.
Yeah, amazing, yeah, isn't it?
Like this brand new circle labyrinth right before the train trestle. It's got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 entries and exits. Plus pedestrian crossings. It is a nightmare waiting to happen.
It reminds me of, we made a comment the other day. We thought maybe someone got hired new in the city and they said, oh, I just learned this in college. This is great. And we don't understand it. I don't. I've driven through there. I've looked at it. Everyone's complaining about it. A lot of things that change, people complain. Maybe it really works, but it reminds me of National Lampoon's European Vacation when they got caught in that circle.
Yeah.
And they just keep driving around and around.
Oh, it's global, friendly labyrinth. And and you're on your own. I mean, as a pedestrian, bicyclist, skateboardist.
Yeah, I never thought about that. How do you get through there as a pedestrian?
Well, it is a nightmare. It is a nightmare. It is so scary. It is so scary. You've got to look around, like up, down, sideways, underneath. I mean, the cars are just coming and jetting in and out of there from every direction. It's insane.
You know, it's kind of bums me out is that's my route to get to the shop. Down through there, and it's like, and since they start doing that, I'm having to find a different route that is more traffic, and I'm afraid that my new route is going to be my new route, and that's because the traffic's going to be so bad through there. It used to be you could just shoot right through there and up the little site, the one-way street, over the trestle, and you're gone.
Yeah.
Now it's like everyone has to be on the same piece of real estate now. There's no century line going over the border. I got a century pass and I can drive straight over the border. No more.
It is so wicked. And I'll bet they'll put like some public water fountain or something where people can hang out, so there'll be all this distraction.
Maybe something really big so you can't see across it.
Right.
You don't even know someone's coming.
No, you won't even be able to see. And then they've got the yield signs on the left side of the street. So, you know, normally you go to the right with your
vision.
I'm
going to have to, Margaret, I've got to jump off. I got Jack and a couple other callers, but we have a 40, top of the 40 break. This is KSCO 1080. And break.
I think she wanted to force it.
Listen to Good Morning Monterey Bay for your chance to win San Jose Sharks playoff tickets.
Brought to you in part by Play It Again Sports. When you go out to play, save lots of money and have just as much fun when you play it again with the quality pre-owned sports gear you'll find every day at family-owned and operated Play It Again Sports on Soquel Drive in Soquel Village. It's new and used sporting goods at Play It Again Sports.
Proud sponsor of the San Jose Sharks. Deal, deal. Get a daily deal. Hey, Santa Cruz County, get 50 to 90% off daily deals from CruiseOnDailyDeal.com. That's right. Get 50 to 90% off daily deals on restaurants, pizza, fast food, spas, golf, sports, sailing, fishing, kayaking, whale watching, massage, events, hotel, wine tasting, B&Bs, boutiques, activities, and much, much more. Go to CruiseOnDailyDeal.com today and register for the deals. Win a summer at the boardwalk, as every week, CruiseOnDailyDeal.com will draw the names of two registrants for boardwalk season passes. CruiseOnDailyDeal.com will send you 50 to 90% off deals from your local merchants. And that's real money. CruiseOnDailyDeal.com is a property of Times Publishing Group, a proud member of Think Local First, and is the only locally owned daily deal program in Santa Cruz County. Get 50 to 90% off daily deals. Register today at CruiseOnDailyDeal.com. That's C-R-U-Z-O-N Daily Deal. When you register, make sure you put KSCO after your name to be eligible for the prize.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. Listen to the things your friends and neighbors are doing for themselves with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Xbox 360 repair.
Solar energy kits.
Musical Tesla coil.
Video output for my home media center.
Building a new server.
Repairing a student radio station.
More RAM and a sound card.
DSL line.
Network printing, scanning, and faxing for dentists.
Replacing antivirus on 12 machines.
Wireless network for court reporter agency.
Diagnosing sound card problem.
Building a 5-kilowatt amplifier.
Ham radio antenna.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Voted best electronics store 2 years running. Call Santa Cruz Electronics today at 831-479-5444 or visit at 2808 Soquel Avenue in Santa Cruz. Do it yourself and save money with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Our house is a very, very, very fine
Real estate can be really confusing these days, but we make it easy to understand on Open House Radio. Hello, I'm Renee Mello, host of Open House. Each Saturday at 2 p.m., we reach into all the neighborhoods of the local real estate market and talk our way through appraisals, financing, inspections, offers, closings, with all kinds of real estate experts. Join me, Renee Mello, for Open House Radio Saturday, 2 p.m. on KSCO.
Happen here. Right on.
Right on. We're back. We've got some callers stacked up here. I'm going to go to, looks like, Jack in Watsonville. Jack, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How are you doing today?
Doing okay, other than a pretty bad cold.
Uh-oh.
So pardon my voice. I was just wondering what your take is on that recent ruling in Indiana regarding entry of police and searches without warrants. Are you familiar with that?
I don't think I'm familiar with it, Jack. Could you clarify it for us a little bit?
Sure. It was in the Indiana Supreme Court on a 3-2 ruling. The case stemmed from the police requesting entrance into a home. They had no warrants and no probable cause, and the homeowner resisted, trying to barricade them off, and due to that, there has been a new ruling saying that the citizens cannot resist entry by police for any reason or no reason at all, and that was basically the ruling. Whether that
and they had no probable cause. There's got to be something else there that would get them to rule.
I mean, it may have been the emergency doctrine or something along those lines. I don't know, but unless it's the Supreme Court, if it's Indiana ruling, it's going to have little or no impact here in California.
Right. I know it will not impact us right now. I'm just wondering what your general take. It did not appear that there was an emergency or any probable cause. I don't know what the reason is.
That's weird that there wouldn't be a probable cause of any type, because then it's just
the court usually applies, if there's not specific law, they usually apply the reasonably objective or objective reasonable objective criteria.
Someone's life's at stake.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the case decision. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with it having occurred in Indiana, but the court obviously, in their opinion, ruled that there was some justification. They're not just going to allow, wholesale entry of officials and law enforcement into people's homes, because still consider their home as your castle. But
and I'm sorry, I'm sorry when guys like Richard and I forget who from Boulder Creek, or they call in and they say they want the government to take over the army and the services. For me, that means that's where we're headed. That all your rights are gone at that point, because they can do whatever they want. I know they say that, but I don't really think they believe that would be a positive way to do that. It's just the country would change. I would at that point I would move out of the country. I would not live under that. There's no.
I agree with you there, and I disagree strongly, Richard. I don't think we really want to be under martial law.
No, it's a horrible, and it's proven historically that it is a horrible life. It's not a quality of life. It's not. There's curfew at that point. There's. You cannot. You're not free. We are free here to move anywhere we want. We are free. I can get in my car and I can go anywhere I want. I am not going to get stopped. I'm in Mexico a lot. How many times do I get stopped? How many times do I have to stop at a checkpoint? They have the right to empty everything out of your car. You have no rights there until you really live that on a regular basis. You come home and you go, man, I don't get stopped, and I have the right to say, don't search my stuff. In Mexico, you don't have those rights, and I don't think people realize it until you go down there and every single article you own is all over the roadway, and you have to pick it all up and put it back. Your car, one of my trucks was stripped, all the headliner, the door panels, all of that, because they said that I was I fit the description of someone that brings drugs into the country.
It's the beard, Scott. It's
all beard. It's got to be. But here's the funny part. I can speak some Spanish. And I said, why would I be bringing drugs into Mexico? And the investigator said, well, why? I said, well, they're expensive in America, and what am I going to do, sell them for cheaper? I go, that's a horrible business model. And they looked at me and said, you sure do know a lot about drugs. As they ripped my car apart. I mean, literally every panel, they tried to keep it. It's a nice truck. They wanted the truck, and I wasn't able to let them have it. You know, I called the attorney and had the attorney go up there and ended up paying to get my truck back. So we live in the greatest country. I've been all over. This is a great country. You are free here. You have to know your rights, though. You have to know, you know, you have to educate yourself. There's a part of this that you need to do yourself.
Well, I agree.
And you do need to complain if something's wrong, mm-hmm. because this is not falling on deaf ears when you make a complaint. If you're not happy about that complaint, you have 10 other ways to complain. It doesn't end there, but it ends with you. You know, you have to be willing to go out and do it. You know, if you're really upset, complain about it. It'll get handled.
Yeah.
But you have to remain vigilant, and freedom isn't free. I wonder if people that were willing to give away their freedoms and their rights, they should think really long and hard about this. I mean, they say you never want to drink water till the well goes dry, and I'd hate to see people looking back and say, boy, we sure miss our rights and our freedoms.
Exactly.
That is true. That's why, you know, I complain about it. If there's a problem, you complain. You go out, squeaky wheel gets greased. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you very much. Have a nice morning.
You bet. We're gonna run over. It's 479-1080. We're going to run over to Jim in Monterey. Jim, Scott, and Rick here. Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah, I actually was calling about the Indiana ruling as well, and I am glad to hear your response, and I'm glad to hear that both of you respect the rights of the citizens of America and the rights that we all have, and that makes me make me sleep a lot better at night. And I have to say I disagree with the ruling. It's not that I disagree with it. It's the principle. You know, if police officers decide to enter your home and you decide to resist, it's futile. You know, you're going to end up breaking a law at some point and being guilty of something at some point if you resist them. So in a way, I understand the ruling. At the same time, on principle, you know, it does take away the idea that people have a sanctity in their home.
Jim, it also goes back to what I've been saying the whole time. I know Rick says the same thing. It's, you know, we're people. We're no different than you or your friends. We're all, you know what I mean? It's, we have the same, we do the same stuff you do. And that's kind of that isolation thing that we're talking about.
Well, that's true. And that's
my friends
point.
And I wasn't a cop. I came into it really late. I didn't start when I was 21 or back then. You probably started when you were 18, maybe.
Right.
Rick.
But you know,
Yeah, 21. Yep. I started later. I had a lot of life experience, but a lot of my friends are cops and they're regular people. They do the same stuff. You know, they have this idea that we want to search every house. We want to be able, but guess what? I live in a house. I don't want someone coming in and kicking my door. There's no way. That's my house. That's, you know, that's my kingdom, so to speak. I'm not going to let someone just walk in.
Right.
Unannounced.
Right. Yeah, but that's a two-sided coin too, because just like you police officers are human beings, they're just like everybody else, and there are rotten people out there.
Yeah,
you know, and there are people who will take advantage of things when they get the opportunity, and I think that there are probably police officers that'll do the same thing.
Oh,
so
absolutely,
that's
why we need to have a codified system that safeguards like search warrants and that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, not only that, it goes back to, like we said, if there's a problem, complain about it. If it doesn't go where it's supposed to, complain it to a different department and make sure it gets handled. That's how you weed out the bad apples, that by stepping up. And we've had a couple callers say that, no, these guys are doing this, and this. Did you complain? No. Well, they're going to continue to do that. That's human nature, and we can't control that, and it's impossible to see all of it.
You know, Jim, as a police chief and as assistant director with corrections, I encourage people that felt that they had a complaint or had been wronged to get a hold of us, get a hold of the police department, and it's very self-serving. One, we want to address the issue. But two, when people do get frustrated and they look out and they reach out to those other resources without coming to me first, what do you think happens? They contact 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. They go to their state senator. They go to the local legislator. They go to the governor. And they get on a letter-writing campaign. Something I could have fixed in maybe a few minutes now turns into a monster for me as the administrator, the person in charge of those folks. I have to do due diligence, look into it, get the information, get the facts. I now can hopefully make that person happy. But what I'm left with is probably 10 or 15 letters I have to generate, all personal letters back to the legislator, back to the governor, back to this person or that person. It's a make work for the department head. So I encourage citizens not to hold back. If they've got a complaint, a viable and a righteous complaint, go to the source and make a complaint. You think you're going to bother the individuals, like a police chief, you may.
But it goes back to liability, though.
Yes,
the police chief is liable for his department. He is 100% liable personally and
civilly.
Right. So when you make that complaint, it doesn't get addressed and it doesn't go past. He's liable for that. He wants to make sure this gets corrected. So you got to start there and you got to work your way from there. There's, you know, I made a comment earlier about that, that your job, my job, every one of those could end in a minute. It could end because we're liable. There's so much liability on this job that, and this is a career. This is your family. This is your payments, all your house. You're in a career that could end so quickly in so many different ways. It's very stressful, you know, to do the right thing. Is the right thing always the right thing when it happens? How many times have we sat the next day and gone through these reviews to see if we did the right thing?
Right. After action reports, investigations. Oh, absolutely.
Heavy. And to hear, hey, you should have done this or you should have done this. But in the middle of it, you can't think of everything.
No.
It's impossible. It's very stressful to go to. So, like you said, you got to complain if there's a problem. This is his job, you know, or any of the chief's jobs or the sheriff. Or,
right.
That's ultimately their job. That's part of the big part of the job, isn't it? To make sure that.
Absolutely. Make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and make sure the troops stay focused. And if they don't, you recalibrate their compass.
Jim, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump off here. I want to talk to Rick about what he's doing now. It's kind of impressive. So thanks for the call. Rick, I'm kind of impressed. You gave me your card. I didn't know what you were doing. I haven't talked to you in a little while. Who are your partners on this thing? It's pretty amazing.
Well, the names, I think, have come up pretty much during this broadcast and in pretty positive fashion. Myself, of course, with 40 years of experience, and there's the senior partner is Terry Medina from Watsonville. Of course, he was the chief down there for, 20 years. And then Steve Belcher from Santa Cruz was their chief for 10 years. We all have about 125 years experience in law enforcement when combined. Sometimes it feels like I have 125 years experience, but I don't. We created a company, BEMA, or Belcher, Ely, Medina and Associates, and it's a public safety consulting firm, and it was actually written up in the Mid-County Post here probably about a year ago. And we do a variety of things, but we basically, Steve and I talked about forming this while we were still being chiefs and engaged in our various professions. So the last year and a half, we've created a company, Belcher, Ely, Medina & Associates. We do organizational analysis, problem solving, grant writing. We do some third-party investigations. We do risk management. We are also available for interim assignments. Pretty much whatever anybody may want. Right now we're consulting with a number of law enforcement agencies, assisting them in whatever capacity they need assistance. It's a good time for
us. And several businesses.
And businesses.
Outside law enforcement to help them get policies together.
And several law practices, exactly. But in a time when a lot of agencies are cutting back, they don't have the resources they need. Certainly not to pay an individual full time to do something that, you know, could be done part time. So we are assisting in that fashion. And it's fun. It's one of those things you want to do.
It's interesting. Three great chiefs of police is all still working away. I thought you guys were all kicking back and kicking back at the golf course, and you guys are out here working as hard as you've ever worked. I'm impressed with that. I like I told you, it's hard to keep track of your work. You know, you want to probably work harder than I do. But
I don't think that's correct.
We're gonna wrap it up here. I really appreciate you guys letting me come on the air. I filling in for Michael Zwirling. It's always an honor to come on here. I know I'm not a seasoned veteran on here, and thanks for being patient with me. I'm not a good radio man yet. It's hard to work all these buttons and all this stuff. I just know Nikki
you're doing good.
Nikki pretty much takes care of everything for me here. But this is a subject that they asked me to talk about. I have no problem talking about it. I think it's still something. This did not, all your comments didn't fall on deaf ears because of what Mr. Ely's doing now. He's been taking notes and all that, and I know they're going to address it. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, KSCO 1080.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
You bet. Thank you.
KSCO Santa Cruz, and we join Fox News in progress.
In farmland to save New Orleans and Baton Rouge from a catastrophe.
Once the Morganza spillway opens, it will send water towards people who knew this day would come.
Sure, everybody does, living on these areas.
The U.S. Army Corps reminds residents yearly on its website and with written notices. Because back in the 50s, when the federal government built the spillway in the old river control structure, the government paid the landowners for that perpetual right.
Lisa Reyes with Fox Affiliate, our Fox Affiliate in New Orleans, WVUE-TV. More candidates diving into the Republican race for the presidential nomination.
Texas Congressman Ron Paul is officially a candidate for president. His announcement coming just days after former House Speaker Newt Gingrich jumped in the ring.
I believe we can return America to hope and opportunity.
2008 hopeful Mike Huckabee may give it another go. He's planning a major announcement during his Fox News Channel show tonight. And Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann sent out an email to supporters this week asking them to donate $25 if they want her to return to the U.S. House and donate $50 or more if they prefer she make a White House bid. In Washington, Jared Halpern, Fox News Radio.
President Obama using his weekly address to push for more domestic oil production.
I believe that we should continue to expand oil production in America, even as we increase safety and environmental standards.
The president insisted alternative forms of energy be part of America's plan. Republicans said the president isn't doing enough to encourage job creation.
The threat of tax hikes, along with the torrent of rules and regulations coming out of Washington, has employers sitting on their hands at the worst possible time.
Alabama Representative Martha Roby, Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
When you're on the go and need to know, you can be in touch with Fox News Radio live, anytime, any place. You can skip back in time for up to 2 hours. Listen to free podcasts. Keep up to date with the very latest scrolling news headlines. Or listen to the latest news. Whether you're an iPhone, iPod Touch, or Android phone user, access Fox News Radio now at mobile.foxnewsradio.com. Mobile.foxnewsradio.com. Don't be caught with your apps down.
Nobody ever said it would be easy. It takes drive, determination. This is about effort, not excuses. It's making a better life. This is guts. Hard work, because we never quit. This is realizing a dream. This is business in America. This is Fox Business.
New jobs from General Motors.
General Motors on the comeback trail, promising to pour a couple of $1 billion into 17 different U.S. plants. And in hard-hit Bay City and Flint, Michigan, some of that money is already materializing.
GM is going to make a $109 million investment to support capacity increase of the 1.4 engine that we call the FAM Zero.
Gerald Johnson with Bay City Powertrain talking about the four-cylinder engines that power the Chevy Cruze and the Volt electric car.
This is a great day for Bay City and GM. It wasn't that long ago that we were down at City Hall
really worried that this plant could go away.
Christopher Shannon, the mayor of Bay City. This work will create scores of jobs. GM sales are up 25% this year, with a Volt leading the way. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Police in Ohio say a homeless man died after being crushed to death in a recycling truck. It appears the man had crawled into the shopping center's recycling bin to sleep. The bin was then emptied into the truck. 44-year-old Paul Wilder died from multiple blunt force injuries. A legend is ill.
At last.
Blues legend Etta James has been hospitalized in Riverside, California, suffering from infections of the blood and urinary tract. The family said she'll remain under a doctor's care until her condition is better. The 73-year-old singer is also fighting dementia and leukemia. She was hospitalized about 15 months ago for a blood infection. James's medical ordeal is playing out against a legal battle between her husband and her sons over control of her $1 million estate. James is a three-time Grammy winner, known for her signature tune, the 1961 ballad, At Last.
At Last.
Bill Vitka, Fox News Radio.
The Defense Department will not be quickening the Associated Press's request for pictures of a dead Osama bin Laden. In a letter, the Defense Department tells the AP it does not believe there is an urgent need for those pictures. The AP is asking for the photos under the Freedom of Information Act. I'm Karen Riegel, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. Partly cloudy today. High of 63. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight we have a 70% chance that it'll rain.